Hey, what is going on, Los Angeles? It's J.Dot, T.Dot, and I hope that you're so well. On this installment of JT the LA Storyteller podcast, yours truly chats it up with Fidel Martinez of the LA Times' Latinx Files newsletter, as well as the new Delos initiative and platform. Fidel and I have a rich discussion about so many things Latinx or Latine or Latino, including a really neat discussion on Blood In, Blood Out, the cult favorite for generations that just completed its 30th anniversary only this year. We also talk about Fidel's coming out to the LA Times or the city of Los Angeles from way out in the Rio Grande city of Texas. I hope you'll enjoy the episode as much as I certainly enjoyed our time together. And remember, if you haven't hit that follow or subscribe button just yet, please do so ASAP. And if you want to support the show, which of course would mean the world to JT the LA Storyteller, you can do so through the Patreon link below just as well. Okay, that does it for me. Until the next time, stay vigilant and stay tuned. It's J.Dot, T.Dot, out with more soon. It's Jimbo times.
Kind of get that, like you love to rep where you're from, you know,
100%.
And you know, in my own writing in the Latinx Files newsletter, every time I happen to mention, or if the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, where I'm from, you know, comes up in a story, I'll always include the Puro 956 joke in there, because you know, it's where I'm from.
Oh,
you know?
Right. Yeah. See, it's interesting because when I read that from the LA side, I wonder a little bit about the origin of that, because I think, oh, that kind of term is specific to a certain side of LA, and to see it from this other angle or sort of put in this other way, that's new to me. For this reason, I'm excited about bridging a little bit of a gap of info so that there's more of a cross-cultural exchange between writers in LA, from LA, writers in Texas, from Texas, and so on and so forth. Wherever we are, clearly this is a moment for our communities, and especially for those of us who are first or second generation folks that are kind of just breaking into the mold out here in these industries. So I'm excited about, yeah, delving into some of this with you.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm a huge fan of your work.
Likewise, and to be certain, we are here with Fidel Martinez, who has graciously agreed to chat with yours truly for JT the LA Storyteller podcast. I have definitely been meaning to have a conversation with Fidel since the days of the pandemic, because I feel as though that's when a lot of us kind of met online or virtually. I've certainly been following Fidel's work at the LA Times and through the Latinx Files, and most recently through Delos as of late. And welcome. You just got off of the 101 freeway coming out from El Segundo, I take it, from the LA Times headquarters.
Yeah. No, I actually didn't take the 101. I went down La Cienega and then cut through Crenshaw, you know, and then Wilshire, and then, you know, just a little zigzagging through internal LA. But yeah, it was, you know, we were talking about it before we started, you know, recording, but I kind of, whenever you have to make those long journeys from one side of town to the other, I prefer cutting through the city, because you get to know it better, you know, you get to sort of see it, you know, be, you know, people just walking around.
That's right.
The unique right. little details of each neighborhood.
That's right. The señoras, and then Crenshaw with its murals, and the buses that you have to lag behind sometimes because, hey, like, respect the bus. I do my best, actually, when I am driving through these streets and am in a little bit of a rush, to nevertheless respect that bus lane, because, hey, that's where the people are getting on, and why not? Why not be a mindful driver in every respect, including for the public transpo that we somewhat love, somewhat hate, because there's not enough of it out here. That's something we were also talking a little bit about. And that's not new to you either, because you are originally from El Paso,
no,
Texas.
No, I'm from the Rio Grande Valley.
From the Rio Grande Valley. Let's go. Okay.
So. El Paso is sort of like our cousins, you know, because they're also, you know, borderland Mexican Americans.
Got it.
But it's also, interestingly enough, the El Paso, whenever you make the drive from the Rio Grande Valley to Los Angeles or vice versa, El Paso is the halfway point.
I understand. So you're even farther south than
yeah,
El Paso.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's about 24 hours of total driving. And I've done it a few times just because.
Really? 24 hours starting from which point to
From LA to McAllen, Texas, or back, you know. But it's a 2-day drive, right? But it's. I kind of really enjoy making it because, you know, if you grow up in Texas, like you do drive a lot, it's a very driver heavy place, which
yeah,
is
tell.
Not necessarily a good thing, obviously, right? I feel like we should advocate for more public transportation. But you're used to making these long-haul drives, you know, so a six-hour drive is nothing. You know, you're just, I'm getting the open highway, et cetera, right? Whereas here in LA, it's more zigzagging through traffic. So it's a different type of driving.
Yes, entirely. Yes, it is. I remember I was going through Texas once. I was in a car, and it was very much a straight path forward. It was very much like, you're going to cut through the desert. You're going to see basically nothing for a long, long time. You're going to wonder if you've gotten lost in all of this. And eventually, you will finally reach your destination. As opposed to, just as you said, here in Los Angeles, where you're going from one place to the next, every 15 or so minutes, you're doing some kind of interchange, or you have the opportunity to do some kind of interchange. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that you have this lived experience going back and forth from LA to which part of Mexico, to be certain?
So my family is originally, my mom is from Reynosa, Tamaulipas, which is a border town across, border city across from where I grew up. And my dad is originally from San Luis Potosí, but he spent much of his years, his formative years in Reynosa or in Chicago, Illinois, you know. So my parents, like migration and moving from one place to the other and making homes in places that we didn't know before is not new to us, you know, and to a certain extent, and I don't want to minimize the experience of my parents, right, or, you know, ignore the fact that because of their efforts and sacrifices, I belong to a different, you know, socioeconomic class than they do. But it's not lost on me that even though I'm not originally from Los Angeles, this has become an adoptive home for me, right? And the reason why I moved here is the same reason that my parents moved, for economic reasons, right? This is where the job was, so.
Man, that is so cool. It's like, it's challenging at the same time that it's empowering, right? Because just as you put it, you get to tackle new horizons and do that strictly through the labor you put out, strictly through the connections that you establish, and strictly through the community that you also develop or foster over time, given your interest in community storytelling, given your interest in the Latinx community or the Latino and Latina community. And I'm excited about, what you're bringing to the LA Times and also what you're inheriting there, because that paper has such a long legacy in this town. And most recently, I've definitely seen the LA Times up to some really interesting, innovative work. And I'm so happy to see that as a longtime reader of the work. And of course, you've got Gustavo Arellano there. You have Susie Exposito. You have a lot of peers and colleagues. Shout out to Steve Lopez as well with the new Golden State column, I believe it is. I love that. I think that there's just a great team in the mix at this moment, at the same time that you're coming from this other side of the country with a whole lot to bridge.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not lost on me that I'm not from Los Angeles. And I know that some people feel some kind of way about someone who's not from LA leading a new Latino vertical, right? About Latinos and in Los Angeles. And it's valid criticism. But my thinking is, you know, like Los Angeles has always been the place that people have migrated to, you know, from the early days, right, when it was just a small town at the turn of the century. And that's certainly true for the Latino community here. You know, obviously there's a lot of multiple generational families here, but I'd say that the Latino experience in LA is a huge portion of it is immigrant experiences, right? Or several generations removed. And so I think to me, the only response that I could give to that is that I really love Los Angeles. You know, I wasn't born here, but I felt like destiny brought me here for whatever reason. And I have no intention of leaving, right? And barring catastrophic things like loss of job or housing unaffordability, I have no intention of leaving, right? And I think it's such a beautiful, wonderful, breathing, alive place. And, you know, I think it's, you know, we have this mindset at Delos that what we're trying to do is to write stories, you know, for the entire Latino community, but our primary focus is in Los Angeles, because with all due respect to Miami, I believe that Los Angeles is the Latino, you know, cultural capital of America, you know. And so it's really exciting to be here and to work on that. And the reason why it's that is because of communities, right? And that's the reason why Delos has always been community focused, because it's our stories, right? It's not just us,
right,
who are doing this.
Right. And to be certain, let's wind back only very slightly. Like, I'm very curious. I always love learning about what other people see in the city when they first get here, because I wonder how that aligns or not with a little bit of what I have come to distinguish, or what maybe some of my peers have come to distinguish about the city. So first I want to ask you, when did you arrive to LA for the very first time, and what was your impression of LA at that point?
Now, the first time to ever visit LA or moving to LA?
Let's go with both of those, actually, step by step. When did you first visit this town, and then when did you first move out to Los Angeles?
The first time I visited was, I believe, in 2010 or 2011. And I came in because I had been hired by a media company based here in LA. They were based out of Miracle Mile. They don't exist anymore, I don't believe. But so they flew me in from Texas. And so my first experience of LA was that area, the Museum Row, Miracle
Right,
Mile.
Right, right. Fascinating.
Yeah. Which was, you know, it seemed like LA to me. You know, obviously that's the kind of place that you see in movies and televisions a lot, right? I feel like for a lot of people who are not from here, I would say that media kind of influences your preconceptions of LA.
110%.
You know, and so for me, you know, being a huge fan of movies and of cinema and having seen LA a lot, you know, it was partially influenced on that. And it wasn't a stereotypical of like LA is fake or plastic. That was never my impression, because I'd seen movies like, you know, Born in East LA and Blood and Blood Out. And that to me also showed a part of LA that I wanted to get to know, right?
See, I love hearing that. Yeah. Yeah. Because for my peers and I, watching those same movies was also this transformative moment where we reflected and asked, like, what is the city? Like, how long has the city been this way? I think of Blood In, Blood Out at this moment, and I realized they were capturing this side of Los Angeles that no one else would at that point. And I'm curious about what the experience outside of LA with that movie may be. Do you remember when or how old you were when you first saw that film?
No, that's a movie that I just kind of feel like I've known my entire life. You know, I don't even know the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
But
it is hard to remember.
No, precisely. I'm pretty sure it was my cousin, yeah, Mike, who, you know, he was a year old or two older than me, and I looked up to him because I grew up with so many cousins that they were kind of your friends, right? And he had the movie, and it was the VHS tape, and it was like a two VHS tape set, you know, of it. And we watched it but I just remember, and I remember seeing it in Spanish as well.
Oh, wow.
Because in the Borderlands, you have a lot of, like, you get Mexican channels.
That makes a lot of sense.
You know, and so in Spanish, the movie translates literally as sangre por sangre, which sounds a lot cooler, right?
It sounds so deep. That's right, that's right.
And so, to me, like, this movie has always been a part of my life, and it also kind of very much influenced my impression of Los Angeles. And in fact, exactly. when I first came to visit, even though I was staying in the Miracle Mile, one of the places that I really wanted to visit was Cinco Puntos Carnicería.
Yeah.
Because it's a huge staple in the movie, you know, and I had that whole moment of where I got a burrito, you know, I got a chicharrón burrito.
That's right.
And then I just walked out and I was like, yeah, this feels like the version of LA that I would want to live in, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my first impression of LA.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was in 2011, 2010. And then I moved to LA in January of 2016 to start a job at another media company who I won't mention, but
sure.
it was to write about the 2016, you know, presidential elections. And so the job brought me here from Florida. I was living and working in Miami for the now defunct Fusion, which was a joint venture between Univision and Disney. And so I just wanted to get out of there, and I got this job, and it was really exciting at the time, and it brought me here, you know. And so, yeah, so I've been here since January of 2016. And then within the year, I got laid off from that job, and, you know, one of the way I was freelance writing, but one of the major ways in which I was, you know, paying my bills was through dog walking.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I did that for a while. Like I'm a lot heavier now because I, you know, I stopped walking like 30,000 steps a day. Right. And it was, to me, I enjoyed it because it taught me like, well, you know, things are obviously not great now, you know, personally, you know, career wise, but at the very least, I know that I'm always going to pay my bills, and that provides a level of comfort, you know, knowing that like, should you there ever be adversity, I have this experience of like, oh, I've dealt with this personally, and I know that things might not be ideal, but this too shall pass, right? But additionally, it also, like, I learned to, like, I was walking everywhere in LA.
Exactly.
And so you get to know the city and the neighborhoods and their little nuances and their little quirks and everything, and it just gives you a new appreciation for the city, right? And you see that it really is a living, breathing organism with, you know, kind of a Frankenstein place made out of different neighborhoods.
That's right. I mean, just as you said, if you have to walk through the city, so much changes because you finally get to interact with it at this very visceral level. And I think when you mentioned dog walking, it brings to mind that I haven't seen too many stories as of late about just how lucrative this can be, how consistent and stable this can be in a city like LA, maybe more than any other. I imagine that there are more dog owners in the city and county of Los Angeles than any other metropolitan region elsewhere. I really would make that assumption, and I'd love to see more stories on that, because you're here telling me that this is how you could ensure that you'd have a roof over your head as you sought the next step in your career. That, I think, is so powerful in several different ways, including because, once again, you make your way out to the big city, there's a sudden turn of events, and now you are going to have to apply yourself just as our parents have, just as our parents do daily, as they would want us to do. And there you go. It turns out to be this other point of discovery for you, where you finally get to meet the city in ways that are not as easy to do when you're in that car and just going from point A to point B, from this appointment to the other. So what an interesting way to engage with LA then.
Yeah, no, and I'm forever thankful for that experience, you know, and I think, you know, it was a moment of humility, obviously, right, because I felt like my career had been derailed at that time, and, you know, like it was like eating humble pie, but it also made me realize that, you know, like obviously, like I'd never worked a service job before. Like, I've done, like, you know, I used to work at a call center, right? And my parents are very working class, and, you know, everyone in my family has worked service jobs, right? So for me, I've always been, like, I feel like you can tell a lot about people the way in which they treat, you know, service workers, you know? And so for me, it's always been something that, you know, has been ingrained in my upbringing, right? But it also gave me a new appreciation of just how hard it is to eke out a living in a place like Los Angeles.
That's right.
Right. And I think, you know, it's such a, like, I don't think people really realize how difficult it can be. Right. And, you know, so yeah, I think for me, it was a very critical moment in my career and personal development. And it's something that I'm forever grateful for, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, you know, I can be obnoxious and, like, cocky and arrogant, and that was definitely a moment where, like, I had my tails between my legs, but I'm thankful for the experience.
Now, to be certain, we were talking a little bit about Blood In, Blood Out before we got into the rest of everything. I have to ask you if you had a favorite character from the movie.
Oh, that's a very good question. I think I really like Miklo the best, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's because, you know, he embodies a lot of that having to prove your own Mexicanness, your own Latinidad, right? And, you know, obviously his path took him in a very, you know, to a world of crime. But I also think it really made him understand that the system is kind of set up against people like him, you know? And, you know, yeah, so I'd say, and he also just has a lot of funny lines, you know, and I think that the other two characters have, you know, certain characteristics that don't really, you know, speak to me, and so I kind of would rather pick Miklo.
I love that. I think it makes me think for a moment that we should actually have a conference inviting all the Blood In, Blood Out fans to pick their favorite character. Because actually, when you mentioned the main three, when you mentioned picking between the main three, I realized I didn't have them in mind as much as I had Spider in mind.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah.
Hey, Los Angeles, I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. I just want to take a moment to invite you to my Patreon channel, which supports JT the LA Storyteller podcast in more ways than one, and which also provides just a little more from each convo. And of course, this is because it takes a little bit of work to put this podcast together, including research and reaching out to folks and scheduling things. And then studio time, editing time, finally publishing, and then a little bit of marketing time. And the Patreon channel is just the best way to support all of that, to support independent storytelling in LA by JT the LA Storyteller. So I would love your support, and I can give you my word that it's going to be more than worth it. Now, back to the show.
Well, I mean, I guess I would also mention Montana, right? Because he's a very tragic figure, right? He's someone that also understands how the system works, and he wants to leverage it to, you know, benefit his people, right? There's almost like a, you know, warrior poet quality to him.
Absolutely.
And then the way in which, you know, the fate that he meets is, it's a little, you know, it's like, oh, this idealistic person was murdered. Sorry, spoilers, but, you know.
Right, we'll see.
It is 30 years old, so. But, you know, so it's, I don't know, I think it's a very complex movie and very interesting. And, you know, I know some people really dismiss it, and some of the criticism is kind of valid. I mean, it's not, like, let's just leave it at that, right? But I think the fact that this movie just turned 30 this year, you know, the fact that it still resonates, and not only that, it's very difficult to find, to actually view. You know, you actually can only really see it in physical media, in DVDs or like VHSs.
I didn't even know this.
Yeah, you can't find it on streaming. You know, there are versions of the movie on YouTube, but because of you know, music or whatever, it's not the best quality, you know, and there are chunks that are missing audio, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't really see it anywhere unless you have the physical copy of it, which to me is mind-blowing, because I would say that the popularity of the movie has only increased since then, right?
Yeah. And actually, with that in mind, once again, even if we don't have a national conference, I'd love some conference in Los Angeles, whether it's in MacArthur Park or over there on the east side, because for me, that film is for a community. That film is an invitation to anyone who's ever wondered about this Chicano, let's say, Cholo culture, to learn a little bit about its depth and its pain and its sorrow. And just as you said about Montana, there's so much to each character. They're all very layered. They could all have their own movies/series somewhere out there. And to think that it's kind of something that continues to live on, though mostly through word of mouth, is itself very interesting and very telling about some of these landmarks for the Latinx community in Los Angeles, right? Because you're talking about the city at the forefront of Latinx culture, and yet one of the most critical films for this culture is still somehow just on the margins, circulating, but especially through Convo, and not necessarily because of a whole lot of financial backing behind it. That says a lot about what it is to be Latinx out here and be a fan of the Latinx culture, including Latinx filmmaking, we're going to say.
Yeah, no, it's truly shocking to me that Disney, who helped finance this movie, is involved, has not put it on a streamer. You know, I think it's sitting on a gold mine, and it really is a testament to, if something truly resonates with the community, like, they will ride hard for it,
yeah.
You know? And to suffice it to say that some of these secondary characters in the movie have made a living of, you know, meet and greets, because that movie is so popular. You right. know, the character that does Popeye, you know, who's also a very fascinating individual, he's often in the, you know, doing these appearances, and he's been able to make a living out of that. And that doesn't happen unless a piece of art or a piece, anything really connects with the community at a very, you know, like, deep level.
That's right.
You know, I got a little bit of flack for, like, elevating that, quote unquote, elevating that movie, you know, because I was the one who assigned the story for the Times for the 30-year anniversary of it. And it's, again, I understand that some of the gripes against the movie is that it's a little, it's caricatures, you know, and I understand their point, but it's still, like, you can't argue against the fact that it is a very resilient movie. It has withstood the test of time despite all the fact that it's not on streaming, you know, and so.
That's right. I think it means a lot for young people who are searching for themselves, too, because what I see in that film are a bunch of kids who don't exactly know where to go, and what they rely on is, as you were putting it, resilience, toughness, and grit, and grit at all costs, grit even if it means facing the system at its deepest ends. And I know a lot of people who are fanboys, just like you and I are, who may not necessarily be readers of the LA Times, but who would love any further meditation, any further analysis of one of their favorite films, for sure. I know plenty of those folks out there. So, I mean, I'm happy to give a nod to Blood In, Blood Out on JT, the LA Storyteller podcast, for a moment, because it is definitely well-deserved. And I'm going to call on Danny Trejo out there to get us this film, to get us a mass screening somewhere, somehow. It's got to get done. I know we can do it. We just got to rev that engine up. And I'm excited about that possibility, actually.
Well, I might be working on something, but it's still very, very preliminary, so I can't really say that anything other than, like, I'm actually working on maybe trying to do something of that sort, so.
Well, that's the other part I want to ask you a little bit about, because you are a writer, you are here in Los Angeles from all the way out on the southern side, and you're also a movie buff, so for people listening in, they're going to click two and two together, and they're going to say, oh, so like you're working on certainly like your own script, right? Like you went to LA because LA is the city of Hollywood, among other things, right? So I guess I'll ask you for a moment about what your bucket list is, if you will, when you get out to this city, because certainly you should have one, and certainly you're in the right environment to go the distance with some big ideas. I'm not going to ask you to read any of your work in progress, but I will ask you a little bit about, yeah, like what else are you up to apart from the major role that you play at the Times right now?
I mean, that's kind of taking all of my time. You know, I'm in a very fortunate situation where I can sort of experiment and try things, right? In my new position, I was promoted about last October, I can't even remember. Time's a blur at this point, you know. But, you know, I was promoted to editorial director of Latino Initiatives, right? And that was to one of the things that we did was launch Delos, which is a, what I like to call a platform agnostic, you know, new vertical within the LA Times that is meant to tell Latino stories for and by Latinos, right? And because the target audience that we're going after is very young, we are trying to meet the audience where they are, right? Obviously, young Latinx folk are very much online on platforms like Instagram and TikTok. And so what we're trying to do is create content and, you know, stories for them for those platform specifics, while also trying to do, you know, serious reporting on the website front, right? And we see ourselves as a experimental team where, you know, we realize that journalism right now, specifically print legacy journalism, is in dire shape, right? With and so in order for the paper to survive, we're going to need to bring in more Latino readership, right? And so we're working on different projects that bring that type of readership into the LA Times. Some of it might be like live events. But yeah, I just feel like this job is so, it's kind of like my dream job insofar as that if I have an idea, you know, and if it's doable and feasible, we can just try to do it, right? And I think that level of creative freedom is kind of hard to give up, you know? And I mean, I never actually really had a plan. I just kind of been winging it my entire life, right? And I can't say that I've really moved here to try to break into the entertainment industry, just because, especially now, right, when the strikes are going on. And, you know, I've learned more about how difficult it is to do that, you know, that I have no desire to ever leave, like, the, you know, this little space that I've helped build, you know, for that, you know. But I mean, who knows, right? Things change. But yeah, I think right now the fact that this job allows me to tell as many, you know, Latinx stories as possible, as I can at the moment, and we have plans to tell more, right, is very satisfying. And I feel like what makes this very unique is that you can't really do what, you know, Delos is trying to do at other papers, really, because you don't really have that, like, city in which Latinos are very much a massive part of the city, right? I mean, like, the stat is 1 in 2 Angelenos is Latinx, right? And in Los Angeles City and county, and then in California, it's 40%, right? I mean, Texas maybe, you know, but even then, it's a little bit more, it's different, you know? And we're also in one of the biggest cultural production capitals of the world, right? Sure. In television and film and music. And so it's kind of like the perfect place. I don't know, like, it's hard to explain. I feel like, you know, I just love the city so much, and it's I don't envision ever leaving it. And I think it's just because, you know, Los Angeles feels like the future, in the present. You know what I mean?
I really like this, and I wonder for a moment, because you mentioned especially looking to engage youth readership, and you also mentioned the Latinx demographic in the city. For somebody who's just coming across all of this for the first time, for someone who's just encountering these numbers for the first time, how do those all link up to a better future for the LA Times?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what we're trying to do is invest in that future, right? I mean, I think it's no secret that Los Angeles is a Latino city, and, you know, the percentage of people that are Latino that live in Los Angeles is not the same percentage of readers, right? Like,
right.
We need to, like, the reality is at the time, in order for it to have a sustainable, viable future, you know, the path goes through Latinos, like, full stop, right? And so, you know, this project, Delos, and other initiatives, it's an acknowledgement that it's an area of improvement that the Times has, right? And so for us, you know, we aren't coming into this situation of like, well, let us tell you, you know, Angeleno Latinos, what, you know, your world is all about, right? That's not going to work, you know. I guess I would say that something that we are trying to do is approach everything with intentionality, you know, and that also means recognizing the place, the historical context in which the LA Times exists within the Latino community in Los Angeles, right? We don't have the best stellar history, the best history, you know, with the LA Latino community, whether it was fanning the flames of, you know, racial resentment during the Zoot Suit riots, right? Or just wholly ignoring the Latino community, right? That said, there have been a lot of efforts internally, and they have been efforts from the bottom up, right? This has been reporters and editors who really care about portraying a better picture, a more complete picture of Latinos in Los Angeles. And one great example of that is like the 1983 team at the Los Angeles Times that wrote the Latino series, which was, you know, more than a dozen Mexican-American reporters and editors and photographers who were tired of these tropes, right? And so they set out to do this very ambitious project to capture Latino life in LA back then, right? And it was such groundbreaking work that it won the Pulitzer the following year, 1984, in public service, which is considered one of the highest honors in journalism, right? And to me, that, you know, those two things can be true about the LA Times, right? Yes, the LA Times did these things that malign the Latino community, but there have also been efforts that have been trying to, like, tell our story correctly for a while, right? And so we're approaching it somewhere in the middle, right? The humility of like, yes, these are the sins of the institutions, but we also do have a track record of doing this. And for us, it serves as a guiding light of, if you do good quality work and keep your head down, like, that will resonate with people. You know, if it's all about the work, you know, then I think people will really connect to that. And especially in, like, if you, like, I'm very mindful of critiques or criticisms or things that people point out, you know, because, you know, getting feedback is important, right? We're talking about telling the story of millions of Latinos, you know, and there is no one right way of telling it. And so you have to be mindful of perspectives outside of yours. So that's kind of how we approach the job, you know, and it's a work in progress, and, you know, nothing is ever set in stone, and the only real constant in the news industry has changed, and like having to be mindful and intentional of who your audience is and what your audience's needs are.
Yeah, I think that's entirely correct. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the 1980s series, because I think when you're doing the research as to where you find Latinos in LA, but also when you find Latinos in LA, there's such a treasure trove, right? You can go all the way back to before the 1850 signing of the whole Southwest into U.S. jurisdiction. And you can explore From what I understand, there were also papers that used to publish both in English and Spanish way back in the earliest days of LA and California being a part of the United States. And so there are a lot of different angles you can take to this. And I am curious about what the research has entailed so far. And is it that you have a map of LA in front of you and your team and you're going, here's a place where I'm certain there are some Latinos. Let's go find them. Let's go and tell stories alongside them or have them tell stories to our audience about this city? Or what has the research entail? What else has the research entail?
It's so funny you say that because one of the things that I would eventually want us to get to a point of doing is having some sort of interactive map that not only shows you where we have done stories, but it would show us, oh, this is quite literally a gap in our coverage, right? We haven't gotten to that point yet. We are a month in.
That's right.
I'd like to get us to that point, but that's so funny that you mentioned that because that's something that we ideally want to do, right? Like our goal, our slogan at Delos is everything Latinidad, which is ambitious and it's aspirational, right? For us to truly be everything Latinidad, we would have to tell the more than 60 plus million stories of Latinos that exist out there, right?
That's right. 60 million in the United States. And
I think it's closer to 60, 65. Between 60 and 63, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, there are new Latinx babies born every other minute in this country. So those numbers are constantly shifting.
Right. And it's you know, like, something that I find personally fascinating is how, and it's also a massive part of my job, is to think critically about what it means to be Latino, right? There is no singular way of being Latino or Latina or Latine or Latinx, right? And I'll give you a great example. My family is Mexican American. We grew up in the border, right? We've always seen ourselves as Mexican. My brother-in-law is from Venezuela, right? So he's not Mexican, he's Venezuelan, you know? And so my sister and brother-in-law just had a child, right? And that child is going to grow up to be Mexican, Venezuelan, American, right? And so what makes our experience as Mexicans any more authentic or real than hers, right? Which is, she's still very much a Latina child, right? Whose identity is a little bit more fragmented or diverse, you know, that's or right. It has a broader, you know, more perspectives, right? And so to me, I think one of the things that we're trying to do with Delos is to not tell people how to be Latino, you know, but to explore what Latinidad even means, you know, the good and the bad, right? I think there are a lot of people who rightfully argue that Latinidad is one of its functions is to uphold white supremacy. And it's kind of true. I mean, we do have a lot of colorism and, you know, just speak to anyone that's Black, Latinx or Afro-Latina or Afro-Latino and what their experience with Latinidad, right? Like this whole Latinx identity really means. And it's just like, why would I want to be a part of something that rejects me? Right. And so, again, our approach is to be very open minded and, you know, humble and recognize that whatever our conceptions or preconceptions of what it means to be anything, that can always change. Right. Because identity and community and language and cities and people are constantly evolving, you know, and you have to be able to take that change and that, you know, evolution into account.
Yeah, shout out to the Pew Research Center that will always have some interesting factoids about the Latinx community nationally or in California and where we may be in 20, if not 40 years from now. Because going back to being future-minded, it is so fascinating to look at this rapidly growing community that is bound for change because growth entails change. And to think that you have these major cities with serious opportunities for all of the potential that they store or that the people bring to their streets and avenues and boulevards. And then to think, how can storytelling help support this process and allow people or encourage people to live their best lives, to inherit a world in which they have more resources rather than less, and more references or reference points rather than less, because we are quite literally all over the place. It feels like a privilege. It feels like you hit the lottery a little bit. Even though there are all these challenges facing our communities, it is so interesting to be in the middle of so much range and to be there for the conversation, because you can have that conversation, because you're supposed to have that conversation as a person living in the United States, this country founded on so many different challenges attached to race and where we go as people who have lived in this particular manner with respect to race for so long. Here we are to confuse and mix all of that up and bring it back together somehow just as well, is what I hear you saying.
Yeah, no, and I think to me LA is just, it's such a magical place, because not just like the Latinx community, but all like the, you know, the AAPI community, like the Black Caribbean community, the Black community, like there's so many enclaves of people from everywhere around the world, and we all call Los Angeles home, right? And you know, right now we're recording and here on Virgil, and it's to me, Virgil has always, like, my experience of Virgil has always been like, this is very Central American, very Latinx, you know what I mean? And I feel like, to me, that's how I choose to see the city, right? And like, not to keep gushing about this place, but man, how could you not love Los Angeles, right? And I think that love of Los Angeles and wanting to understand it and its complexity and its messiness, right, and its contradictions is what drives a lot of the work that, like, we're trying to do at Delos, right? I mean, I think we've been trying to be very mindful that our stories don't just capture the Mexican-American community. Like, today we did a story about the Garifuna Museum, you know, and these communities exist, and these are our brothers and sisters. We interact with them. These are our friends, right? So why shouldn't we make an effort to tell these stories, right? Because I think there's a lot of similarities in our narratives, you know, for a variety of reasons, right? I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, Latinos happen to be very working class, right? And I think for me, the goal is to tell make as rich of a tapestry of who we are as possible, you know, with knowing that there's going to be gaps.
Especially with respect to that, I saw very recently on the Latinx Files you writing about this fool again. And I thought, what an important piece, because you pointed out in that article how this fool basically had to get out there through word of mouth. And this second season is also on the verge of exactly that, with the writers and the actors on strike. Right now, it's sort of dependent on folks telling others about this show. And I want to ask, what struck you about this fool and why to this day you're standing by that show? Because I thought this is a fascinating moment for all of us in the storytelling work, because finally we have a show that we can all talk about up to great lengths. And so I want to hear your thoughts as to this fool and why you vouch for this show so much.
I mean, it's funny. The reason why I vouch for it is because it's funny. You know, it's a show that's funny, and that's what attracted me. And it also, like, is a Latino show, right? I know that the creator, Chris Estrada, like, from my experience, I would imagine that he bristles a little bit of that, because, and I get it, because it means a certain thing, right? It's almost like, oh, you're a Latino show, or it's like, oh, this is really funny for a Latino show. Like, no, this is just straight up funny, right? And that to me was something that, given the fact that, you know, Latinx stories tend to be very, like, they tend to, even if they are Latinx creators in them, you can tell the influences or the heavy-handedness of white executives on them, right? Certain things, right, like, that you have to have in order for this to be a Latino show. And one of the Delos contributors, Alex Zaragoza, you know, who's a homie, you know, she's from San Diego and she lives here now, right? Because she is trying to break into the she's like a television writer, right? And so she wrote about, was it even mean to be a Latino show, right? But going back to this Fool, like that show is just so funny and it's so smart and it's so
and
stupid.
And it's so L.A.
And it's so stupid and it's so L.A., right? I mean, and so for me, you know, like having the job that I do and the platform that I do, it's like I want to see more stories like that. You know, like I don't think we should put the pressure on Chris Estrada and that show to be the Latino show. I think we should have more shows like that, right? It shouldn't be like the one, right? It's like I hate this whole notion of, you know, what I call the Highlander effect, that there can only be one like Latino show or one. Like, no, I reject that. Like, we have so many rich stories and we're natural storytellers. You know, I feel like I learned how to tell stories through my dad, right? Who would, you know, in family gatherings, like he would make these he would tell a story and then I learned how to be funny from him, you know, and like have him command an audience, right? And that's sort of like ingrained in my, you know, the way in which I was raised. And so for me, like, I want to support good art that I like and I can vouch and that also is doing something different. And of course I want to see more, you know, Latinx, you know, talent in front and behind the camera, you know, and I think, you know, for today, for this week's newsletter, I wrote about Blue Beetle and I did an interview with the director, Angel Manuel Soto. And part of the reason why I did it is because it's a movie that I genuinely enjoyed. I think it was, for a superhero movie, it's very charming and it's great. And the truth is, we don't have our stories on screen that often, you know, and in my capacity, I want to be able to give these films and these shows and these artists and these communities visibility. You know, to me, one of the most rewarding aspects of my job is people being like, telling me that I felt seen in a story that you guys did, you know, and so that's why we're trying to be as broad on our stories as possible, you know, because there are so many different variables of how Latinidad, you know, like there are so many different variants of Latinidad out there, you know, so we want to just capture all of them. And this Fool is, you know, like more of that, you know, so I will, you know, if the show stops being funny, maybe I won't ride for it as, you know, as hard, but it's funny. It's just genuinely funny stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I think when I read that note, which was that Chris wasn't exactly interested in calling the show one thing or the other, what I really got was that it's up to somebody else to tell that side of the story. A storyteller is going to get you so far before they can only help you reach a different storyteller, actually. And when you have the loss at the Times, as well as these other cultural critics out there, it's incumbent on us to say a little more after the show. And I'm really grateful that we have something at the paper at this point in conversation, in active conversation with some of the best storytelling out there right now through something as funny as this Fool. That feels very fair and basic up to a point. Like, we should have this at our city's paper.
It's a very working class show, yeah. Too.
Yeah, you know? And I haven't delved into the second season just yet. I'm finishing up another show myself. But I definitely love the first season of this Fool, and I can't wait to get into what's next. Shout out to Chris, who was at a warehouse before he was doing this work, who was at a warehouse full-time before he was able to pick up this show full-time. Shout out to that Latinx experience for him just as well, if you will.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So, Fidel, we have had a great convo so far, and I'm very thankful for your time with JT, the LA Storyteller podcast. I want to ask you just what else readers should be on the lookout for with respect to the Latinx Files and how they can keep up with the Latinx Files, with their loss, with just what's going on next at the paper, which is doing some interesting things, some fascinating and timely work in the city today. Tell us where to go, what to follow.
Yeah, so you can find the Latinx Files newsletter, which is a weekly free LA Times newsletter at latimes.com/newsletters. and it's delivered every Thursday morning into your inbox. It's about stories about the Latino American experience, Latinx American experience, and it ranges anything from immigration to This Fool to memes to everything, right? And so you can find that there. And then we also have Delos, which you can find at delosangelestimes.com or latimes.com/delos. And you can find us on Instagram and TikTok as The Los Angeles Times. And yeah, and one thing that I'd like to say is we are very big on community, and one of the first hires that we did at Delos was a community editor. You know, my colleague Jessica Perez, who I have a lot of respect and admiration for, and who is from LA. She grew up in Boyle Heights, right? And before working at the Times, she worked with Boyle Heights Beat, which is a youth organization that, you know, we love and we work with. We just published a story in collaboration with them, because one of the things that we want to do with Delos is to build that pipeline of the next generation of storytellers, you know, and leveraging whatever platform or resources we have to make sure that we don't, not only do we not close the door behind us, but make it wider for more people to come through, right? And so we are constantly taking pitches. You know, we're trying to be out in the community. We're going to be hosting live community events, you know, hopefully with our colleagues at LA Times in Español, because to us, the work that they do is also very invaluable, right? Oftentimes, their audience and our audiences, they might not be the same person, but they probably live in the same household, right? And so for us, we want to be a utility and a service for the community here in Los Angeles. And part of doing that is by being present and visible at events and just listening to what people want to know, right? Because obviously, you know, the only way for the Times to have a viable future is to be more in tune with what the community needs and wants.
So you heard it here, Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Times and Fidel Martinez are absolutely on the lookout for pitches, for storytelling from your side of town. And I certainly encourage you to go ahead and follow them wherever you can on your preferred platform. I've been checking out the Los's articles as of late too, and it's so much fun to sift through. I'm happy for the LAT as well as the team over here at the Los. And Fidel, once again, thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. And I just want to reiterate that I really am a huge fan of the work that you do, you know, through this podcast and also the Making a Neighborhood. I think it's necessary work, you know, and I feel like I'm a huge fan of your work, and it's been a pleasure and a privilege being here.
It's Jimbo Times.